But as Commander-in-Chief, I can assure you that I will mobilize every resource necessary.
The U.S. President pushes ahead with a very controversial task. This is Monday, the 23rd of August, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, a VOA reporter was stuck at Kabul Airport. She'll tell us about it. Many Afghan women fear for their future. The WHO sounds the alarm about health care in Afghanistan. The world watches the China-Taliban relationship. And anti-lockdown protesters in Australia clash with police. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Amid intense criticism of his administration's chaotic military withdrawal from Afghanistan, President Biden spoke Friday about ramping up evacuation efforts for Americans as well as the thousands of stranded Afghans desperate to flee the country following the Taliban takeover. White House correspondent Patsy Witakaswara has this story.
Thousands of desperate Afghans surround the Kabul airport where chaos continues. The sound of gunfire no longer alarming even for children. 13,000 people have been evacuated on U.S. military aircraft since August 14th, according to the White House. President Joe Biden on Friday called it one of the largest, most difficult airlifts in history. He pledged to Americans who want to leave Afghanistan, "We will get you home."
I cannot promise what the final outcome will be, or what it will be that it will be without risk of loss. But as Commander-in-Chief, I can assure you that I will mobilize every resource necessary.
The administration estimates there are 10 to 15,000 Americans left in the country. Biden said he is also committed to evacuating special immigrant visa or SIV holders, potentially tens of thousands of Afghan translators who helped the American war effort and their families who fear life under the Taliban.
There's no one more important than bringing American citizens out. I acknowledge that. But they're equally important almost as all those who, those SIVs we call them, who in fact helped us.
Human rights organizations say it's not enough.
I and my other human rights colleagues are not happy with what we're hearing from the Biden administration. We're working day and night with Department of Defense, State Department, USAID, the White House. There are people in those positions who are working around the clock to get Afghans out. So this is separate from that and their amazing efforts. But policy-wise, we are not hearing that there is a priority being put on getting at-risk Afghans out. These are the human rights defenders, the women, the journalists, the academics, who have no visas, who don't even necessarily have passports. What are they supposed to do?
The massive operation has encountered problems. With intake facilities in Qatar overwhelmed, flights out of Kabul were paused for several hours Friday. Another huge challenge for American and Afghan allies, getting into the airport past Taliban checkpoints. The U.S. is considering rescue operations to help them. Several NATO nations have proposed that Kabul airport remain open for evacuations beyond the current deadline of August 31st.
The limiting factor is not the lack of planes. The limiting factor now is actually the ability to get people into the airport process and on the planes.
Additional U.S. troops are being deployed to help with evacuation. The administration said there are now 6,000 American soldiers on the ground. So far, the U.S. is not planning to extend the security perimeter beyond the Kabul airport to avoid what Biden called unintended consequences. Patsy Witakaswara, VOA News at the White House.
These are some of the stories you'll find at voanews.com. Myanmar's military government arrests two more local journalists, one of them a VOA commentator. They're the latest among dozens of detentions and a sweeping crackdown on the media. Singapore's foreign minister says the progress by the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, and Myanmar has not been as effective as hoped. South Korea to get more Moderna COVID shots in a boost to vaccination effort. Two cities in China's central province of Henan issued highest flood warnings Sunday, calling for local agencies to prepare for torrential rains. Tokyo weighs the use of Olympic venues as temporary medical facilities. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Western nations, particularly the United States, have evacuated thousands from Kabul, but the process is chaotic. VOA's Aisha Tanzim was stuck at Kabul's international airport for days. She explains that the biggest difficulty right now for those wishing to leave Afghanistan is getting inside the airport.
Desperate people trying to escape the Taliban's Afghanistan. At Kabul's international airport, the lines are long and more are coming every day. With thousands gathered outside, packing the entrances, getting inside the airport is an ordeal.
We are in trouble. See my clothes. See all my clothes and my feet. It's very trouble. There is Taliban and there is America. No one hear about me. I show my all documents, but no one take care. After that, when I fell down with my mom, the American security take us and we get inside.
They are hungry and thirsty from their hours, sometimes days-long ordeal. In the chaos, loved ones have been separated from each other.
Right now here, and all my little brother have earth problem. So I'm not going anywhere without them. So I wish that U.S. troops bring my family for me.
Among the crowd, little children, seemingly oblivious to the uncertainty their families were facing. Western nations are trying to evacuate Afghans who worked with them with their families. But many are without proper documents, making entry to the airport more difficult.
My family is for outside and not paperless help for my family coming. This is very...
Is your family outside the airport?
Yeah. My family outside. I have no paperless and American paper help for me. I'm coming to for my family. This is my badge and this is my badge. ISOF, this is my ISOF badge.
What city?
And Kabul city.
Okay.
And this is from my... Part is this is Paktika.
Others have managed to make it inside the airport but have no passports. Their future is uncertain.
I want to go to a foreign country. I have no passport, only my ID card. What should I do?
As families wait for their turn to board a plane, kids find ways to pass time. Planes flying overhead providing some entertainment.
Whatever they've been through and however tired, hungry and thirsty they are, these people at least have a hope of catching a flight outside Afghanistan. They're wondering what would happen to their loved ones left behind. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News at the Kabul International Airport.
Happening now in Asia, Vietnam's plan to prohibit residents of Ho Chi Minh City from leaving their homes from Monday has triggered panic buying in the epicenter of its worst coronavirus outbreak. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. As the Taliban take control of the Afghan government, women say they're fearful of their future, with many skeptical of the Islamist group's pledges to respect women's rights. President Joe Biden said Friday that if the Taliban won aid and recognition, that will depend on how they treat Afghan women and girls. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
With the Taliban now back in power, some Afghan women say they feel like darkness has fallen over them. During the 20-year U.S. presence, many Afghan girls returned to school and Afghan women returned to the workplace, which had been forbidden under Taliban rule. President Joe Biden said Friday that any international recognition or help for the Taliban will depend on how the Islamist group treats Afghan women and girls.
They're looking to gain some legitimacy. They're going to have to figure out how they're going to maintain that country. And there's going to be harsh conditions. Strong conditions we're going to apply, and it will depend on whether they get help based on whether or not how and well they treat women and girls.
Afghan-American Nazila Jamshidi told VOA her heart hurts for the girls and women of Afghanistan.
For those who were born after 2001, we taught them human rights, human dignity, and freedom of expression. We have given them hope and told them of making a new Afghanistan. All the hard-won gains of the 20 years were lost in 2 months.
Women and girls are vulnerable, says David Phillips, a director at Columbia University's Institute for the Study of Human Rights.
Taliban will take young girls and turn them into forced brides. The future of civil society and independent media is very bleak.
In their first news conference, the Taliban pledged to respect the rights of girls and women within the framework of Islam. But the Taliban's actions during their 2-month takeover of the country have dashed any hopes of moderation. Rina Amir, a mediation expert at New York University, tells VOA.
As they've taken over territory, they've been interrogating women and civil society. They have been creating a real culture of fear. They go into their houses, they have lists, they know their names, they go through their material, they check their cell phones. So they're doing all of the things that they used to do, but in a much more sinister and systematic way, while at the same time they are giving, they're saying very positive things, but it's not materializing on the ground.
At the State Department this week, Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman said the issue was personal to her, recalling her meeting with Afghan women and girls in a refugee camp in Peshawar, Pakistan, with then Secretary of State Madeleine Albright in 1997.
In the last 20 years, Afghan women and girls have embraced their freedom. Millions have gone to school. They have become doctors, lawyers, journalists, parliamentarians, and entrepreneurs. They have built the lives that Secretary Albright encouraged them to imagine all those years ago, and so much more.
As the United States steps up its evacuations of Americans and the Afghans who helped them from the Hamid Karzai International Airport in Kabul, Sherman said the United States, quote, will use every economic, diplomatic, and political tool we have to hold the Taliban accountable to their words, unquote. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said he'll convene a meeting of leaders from the Group of Seven Nations on Tuesday for urgent talks on the situation in Afghanistan. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. The World Health Organization is sounding the alarm about health care in Afghanistan, where conflict has left millions of people vulnerable to hunger and illnesses. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
About one half of Afghanistan's population, including more than 4 million women and nearly 10 million children, need humanitarian assistance. The World Health Organization says one third of the population is facing acute hunger, and more than half of all children under age 5 are malnourished. It says the current drought is expected to worsen an already dire situation. WHO officials say they are committed to staying in Afghanistan and delivering critical health care services. However, WHO spokesman Tariq Jazarevich notes that only will be possible if all parties in the war-torn country respect and protect civilians, health workers, and health facilities.
Continuity of health services must continue without interruption across the country, with a focus on ensuring women have access to female health workers. Most of major health facilities are functional, and this is based on a provincial level field monitoring. Health workers have been called to return to remain in their posts, including female health staff.
The new Taliban rulers of Afghanistan have promised to protect women's rights and allow them to work and study. However, since they have seized control of the country, there have been reports of female workers having been dismissed from their jobs. Nearly 300,000 Afghans have fled their homes in the last 2 months, fearing for their safety as U.S. and NATO forces hastened their departure from the country. Jazarevich says those newly displaced people are extremely vulnerable. They lack food, shelter, and many suffer from a variety of health problems.
In areas where people have recently fled, including Kabul, WHO received field reports of increase in cases in diarrhea, malnutrition, high blood pressure, COVID-19, black symptoms, and reproductive health complications. When it comes to trauma cases, close to 14,000 conflict-related trauma received at 70 WHO health facilities in July 21.
He says that is more than three times higher than the number of trauma cases received during the same period last year. The WHO spokesman says attacks on healthcare facilities also pose a major challenge. In the first half of this year, he notes 26 health facilities were damaged and 31 healthcare workers were assaulted. He adds 12 of the health workers were killed. The WHO says medical supplies and equipment are in short supply. It says the most pressing needs are for reproductive and child health services and nutrition supplements to address rising malnutrition among children, especially those affected by conflict. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Making headlines in Asia, Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte ordered the health and budget ministries to arrange payment for healthcare workers who have not received their benefits on time. That followed nurses' threats to resign and strike warnings by unions. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, as the U.S. leaves a vacuum in Afghanistan, people worldwide are watching China's response. The two countries share a border and have on-and-off ties that predate the September 11th terrorist attacks in the U.S. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has the details on the risks and benefits of the China-Afghanistan relationship.
Long before the balance of power in Afghanistan changed swiftly, China had been paving the road for a relationship with the Taliban. On July 28th, China's foreign minister met with high-level Taliban officials in the Chinese city of Tianjin. Rafael Pantuji is a Central Asia expert.
But actually, in the week before that, President Xi had actually called and spoken to President Ghani and impressed his continued support for the Afghan government. So China's essentially been hedging.
International security analyst Seth Jones says China was a factor in the speed of the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan.
The Afghan security forces recognized that the Taliban had the support of China, had the support of Russia, Pakistan, and Iran. Most of the major countries in the region, probably with the exception of India. So morale was devastated.
Some analysts say China's interests in Afghanistan include its mineral deposits and location relative to China's Belt and Road Initiative, which aims to expand China's political and economic influence to Europe through investment in infrastructure projects. While the vacuum left by the U.S. in Afghanistan could be an opportunity for China, analysts expect Beijing to be cautious. Andrew Small is a China foreign policy expert with the German Marshall Fund of the United States.
China still sees Afghanistan through this sort of obsessive graveyard of empires prism. They don't want to get sucked in. They think it's a risk. They think it's a trap.
China's biggest concern is security.
First of all, ensuring that there isn't a spillover of some of the security threats in Afghanistan to the wider neighborhood, where China has much more substantial economic, political, and strategic interests certainly the case for Central Asia, and particularly, I think, in the case of Pakistan.
With Chinese investments and transportation routes through Pakistan, the two countries share a need for stability, says Pakistani Senator Mujahid Hussain Saeed.
First, that Afghan soil should not be used against China. It shares a 50 miles long border with Afghanistan.
Politically, China has used the situation in Afghanistan to criticize the U.S. Here's Hua Chunying with the Chinese Foreign Ministry.
We've seen the U.S. military leave an awful mess of unrest, division, families ruined and orphaned.
While Afghanistan may be a public relations win for China, Pantuji says the reality is different.
I think concerns about Afghanistan becoming a place where Uyghur militants or dissidents can sort of plot and foment trouble within China is, you know, one of China's preeminent concerns.
While China sees the Uyghur Muslims as a threat and a part of its war on terror, human rights groups have raised alarms over China's persecution and treatment of Uyghur Muslims. Analysts say it would be costly for the Taliban to take up the Uyghur cause. The Taliban may not sympathize with the Uyghurs for another reason: religion. Central Asia expert Hassan Karar spoke to VOA from Pakistan.
In both places, the role of Islam, how Islam is understood, is very, very different.
Analysts agree China will take on a watch and wait stance as the situation in Afghanistan unfolds. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Washington.
We continue on VOA Asia. Thousands of anti-lockdown protesters in Australia have clashed with police. There have been clashes in Melbourne, while many arrests have also been made in Sydney. Both cities are under strict stay-at-home orders as the Delta variant continues to surge. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
In Melbourne, thousands of people defied the authorities to march in the city centre. Protesters clashed with the police, and videos posted on social media have shown chaotic scenes in Australia's second biggest city. In Sydney, 1,400 police officers prevented a large-scale anti-lockdown rally, but there was still violence. Demonstrators were heard chanting against strict stay-at-home orders and repeating anti-vaccine conspiracy theories. Many arrests have reportedly been made in both cities, which are under some of Australia's toughest ever lockdown restrictions. Earlier, authorities in New South Wales announced Australia's worst day of the pandemic so far, with 825 new COVID-19 infections in the state. State Premier Gladys Berejiklian says the Delta variant is so contagious that Australia's long-held strategy of trying to eliminate the virus is over.
We can't live in our bubble forever. And of course, New South Wales, because of our situation, is confronting this challenge earlier than what we hoped we would. But the challenge is that every state has to live with the fact that once you get to 80% double doses and your population is allowed to live more freely, the Delta variant will creep in.
Authorities are making a final push to stop the worsening COVID-19 crisis in Australia's biggest city. Sydney's lockdown is being extended and it's getting even stricter. There'll be a curfew in virus hotspots, masks must be worn outdoors, and the police have even tougher powers to enforce stay-at-home orders. Mass vaccinations are continuing as the number of infections rises.
With the cases today, yeah, we're very happy we've been able to come here and get vaccinated.
It's a really scary number to think that even last week we were concerned about it, and now it just seems like it's getting out of hand.
New Zealand has extended a nationwide lockdown until at least Wednesday, as a cluster of COVID-19 infections has grown to more than 50 cases. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern.
We just don't quite know the full scale of this Delta outbreak. All in all, that tells us we need to continue to be cautious.
Health officials in New Zealand have linked the Delta variant infections to a traveller who returned from New South Wales 2 weeks ago. New Zealand has reported about 3,000 COVID-19 cases and 26 fatalities since the pandemic began. Australia has recorded 42,200 coronavirus infections since the start of the pandemic. 974 people have died, according to the health department. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, Chris Casqueo, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Please stay safe and enjoy the day and the week ahead.